I got good news and bad news. Good news and bad news. What do you want first? Oh, you want the good news first. That's different. Now, most people want the bad news first. I want to start with the bad and then get to the good. You want the good news first. Okay. Good news is I called Sheridan. Yeah, I called Dan Sheridan. What's the bad news? The bad news is I forgot to ask him about that issue I was going to ask him about. The priests. The high priest offering sins daily for his own sins and yearly for the sins of the people. I got to get clear on that. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender. Yeah, Sheridan, an expert on that Old Testament stuff. So I got to get with him. And I did get with him. Yeah, right. That's the good news. The bad news is I forgot to ask him. We were talking about other important things. So I'm going to get back with you on that. I promise. Remind me. Don't let me forget. I don't think you will. Now, I told you yesterday that we were going to talk about covenants. And we are. We're not talking about a testament here. By the way, I don't know if you're ready for this, but you know where the word testament comes from? Are you ready for this? I hope you are. It's from the word testicles. Yeah, because when men testified with one another, they would literally, now, I grab each other by the testicles and make a solemn oath. Yes, that's right. They would reach up under the whatever and grab the testicles, and that guy would grab the other guy's testicles, and they'd swear an oath to one another. And you didn't want to lie. You see, you didn't want to. I am dead serious. I'm not kidding you about this. All right, I'll get the reference. I will get the reference tomorrow about that. But yeah, it's honest to God truth. How could I make that up? That's where it comes from. So a covenant is different. Now, you know, people call this the New Testament, and it's really wrong. The Greek word for testament doesn't carry the modern meaning we have, like a will or a legal instrument to dispose of property or wealth, whatever, after death. That's a testament. No, this is a covenant. This word that's used in the Hebrew is closer to a covenant. So testament, that's a bad translation. A covenant is a contract. To speak of the Greek scriptures as the New Testament and the Hebrew scriptures as the Old Testament is misleading, because you'll actually find the New Covenant back in the so-called Old Testament. Did you get that? You'll find the New Covenant spoken of back in the Old Testament. But forget the word testament, even though, you know, we have the testicles there. It's the same kind of idea. It should have been translated covenant. Jeremiah talks about it. The prophet Jeremiah talks about the New Covenant in the Old Covenant, in the old so-called Old Testament. We don't call it the Old Testament. We call it the Hebrew Scriptures. We don't call it the New Testament. We call it the Greek Scriptures. You get that? There's no turn to the Old Testament. What? What's that? No, we don't turn to the Old Testament around here. We turn to the Hebrew Scriptures. Let's turn to the New Testament. Well, what's that? We turn to the Greek Scriptures. We can't turn to the Old Covenant because it's referenced several places. And besides, the Hebrew Scriptures are not full of the Old Covenant. There's lots of different stuff in there, like in the book of Genesis up to chapter 12. There's nothing about a covenant. We can't turn to the New Covenant starting in Matthew because the New Covenant hasn't even started yet. What's with that? The New Covenant hasn't started yet. The New Covenant is a deal, air quotes, God made with Israel, and it's a total figure of speech because he fulfills both parts of it. A covenant is an agreement between two people. You hold those testicles and you hold that other person responsible to it, literally. And that's a covenant. And God, the Old Covenant had to do with God saying, I'll do my part, Israel, if you do your part. Well, Israel totally failed. So the New Covenant is God doing both parts. And it's suggested, again, by the fact that God put Abraham to sleep when he made this promise, this covenant with Abraham. Did not grab his testicles at all, because, well, God doesn't have a hand, but they put Moses, he put Abraham to sleep, and so it was all his work from start to finish. So if you go to Jeremiah 31, you'll find the New Covenant talked about, and also Ezekiel 36. Let me give you these two references. And we're going to quote Hebrews here, so don't worry, I'm going to go to Hebrews. We're still in chapter 8, but I think we're going to finish chapter 8. Jeremiah 31, 34, Ezekiel 36, 28. You're going to find information about the new covenant. How about that? You're going to find, and testament, forget that word. I'm just telling you, forget it. But it's still, it's the English word is where it's derived from, my word testicles. Did I tell you that? So let's go to Hebrews chapter 8, verse 6. Now, he has happened upon a more excellent ministry, inasmuch as he is the mediator also of a better covenant. Remember I told you yesterday, better, new. And, or did I say new first? Did I say new, better, or did I say better, new? You don't remember? All right, well, I don't remember either. It doesn't matter. Anyway, he's from heaven now. He's in heaven now, and he's going to install the new covenant from heaven. He's going to come down from heaven, and he's a mediator of the better covenant. Now, listen to this. The better covenant has been instituted on better promises. Here's the better promise, that he is going to fulfill it for Israel. I will put my law upon their hearts. Oop, I'm getting ahead of myself there. For if, verse 7, for if that first one, the first covenant, the old one, if it were unblameable, no place would have been sought for a second. For blaming them, he is saying, quote, lo, the days are coming, the Lord is saying, and I shall be concluding with the house of Israel. Interesting, in the Concordant version here, we have a superscript on instead of a with. So this is literally, I shall be concluding on the house of Israel. I love that, instead of with. It's like God's holding their hand. He's their co-pilot. And he's going to bring them safely through. And no, that's absolutely not the thought. He's going to do this on Israel. He is going to put his law on their hearts. It's an act of force. It's an act against their will. It is. It is. Because it's he's doing it. Remember, Abraham was put to sleep. That was suggestive of the new covenant. And the first one was, if it was unblameable, that we wouldn't even be talking about a new covenant, would we? If the old covenant was meant to be, we would not be talking about a new covenant. So why did God, why? Here's the question. I'll try to slow down. I'm getting excited about this because this is an important point. Why didn't God just start with the new covenant? Why did he have to have two? Did he fail? Too bad you tried the route of cooperative salvation there, God. You should have just jumped to the new covenant. No, that's impossible, because he has Israel's well-being in mind. He has their joy and happiness in mind, and their happiness will come on that seventh day, the day of stopping. And the only reason you feel good when you stop is because you've been straining and working for 6 days to futility. Again, 666, the number of man, the number of the days of creation that lead up to number 7, which is perfection, and God stops, and man stops, and Israel is going to stop. But it's the old thing of banging your head against the wall. It feels so good when it stops, doesn't it? And that's it, really. It's banging your head against the wall with the old covenant, and God purposely did that to show Israel that on her own she cannot do the things of God. And I tell you what, if you want to relax your fist, the best thing to do is to hold it as tight as you can for a minute. Hold your fist as tight as you can for 60 seconds, then let it go. It's like, I feel so good when that stops. Yeah, it does. And that's a microcosm of what we're looking at here with the old covenant compared to the new covenant. It's not unblameable. It's not unblameable. But again, does that mean God's imperfect? No, God did it perfectly. He perfectly decided to make an imperfect covenant where man, the human, fails and God does it. And thus the second or new covenant. For blaming them, he is saying, again, here we go, verse 8, lo, the days are coming, the Lord is saying, I shall be concluding on the house of Israel. I love that. On the house of Israel and on the house of Judah, a new covenant. Not in accord with the covenant which I make with their fathers in the day of my taking hold of their hand. This is, I love this. Back in that day, it was like he took hold of their hand and he led them out of the land of Egypt. It was like him and them. And again, the covenant is two parties making an agreement. He does his part, they do their part, and he holds them by the hand. This is being conducted this new covenant on them, to be leading them out of the land of Egypt, seeing that they do not remain in my covenant. We're in verse 9 now. They do not remain in my covenant. That's the understatement of the year. But he remains. Well, he first divorced them. And here it is. And I neglect them, the Lord is saying. He neglects them. We have to go to Romans chapter 11. Let's just go there real quick. Paul, Romans 11, 1. I am saying then, does not God thrust away his people? May it not be coming to that. For I also am an Israelite, out of Abraham's seed, Benjamin's tribe. God does not thrust away his people, whom he foreknew. He temporarily casts them away, but he does not thrust them away. It's like a fishing rod. You cast it out, but it's still attached to the rod, so you can reel it in. So it's not like you've thrust it away. You don't throw. He hasn't thrown the fishing rod of Israel into the sea. That would be thrusting away. He's only cast them away. And he's got the ability to bring them back, but they have to feel his absence. They have to, and they have to try to strain to do it on their own. And the thing is, this people is stubborn and stiff-necked, because in Revelation, we're going to see that Israel is tired of waiting for him, just like Abraham got tired of waiting for the son of promise to be produced, so he decided to do it on his own. Israel is going to get tired, and they're going to produce all the glories of the kingdom, the glories now. The glories of the kingdom in the false city Babylon, which is going to be the financial center of the world, and in Jerusalem and the false temple, which is going to be the religious center of the world. The false religion and the false politics is going to happen in Jerusalem and Babylon, respectively. And Israel is going to make a pact with the nations. This is the harlot. The harlot is going to fornicate with the world, with the goyim, which is the worst sin Israel could commit. They commit it all the time, and this time they're going to try to produce the fruits of the kingdom apart from Christ. They're going to do it in their own efforts. And that is when the wrath of God is going to be exhausted on them, because this is the ultimate idolatry that's going to take place in Babylon once again, just like the idolatry that took place in Babylon, where humanity tries to reach to the heavens, in other words, tries to become as God. That's been the promise, or that's been the seduction all along for humanity, is you will be as God. And they want to get that way, humanity does, apart from God, with their own efforts. It's hard for us to wrap our heads around this, because we have been so long in the grace of God that there's no, in my flesh dwells no good thing, like, duh. And we're like, so there, we've been there. And he reminds us of that every day, because Hebrews 12, going to be getting there, he disciplines his sons. Judgment begins in the house of God. We've learned this lesson. Israel is not going to learn it until he utterly destroys, you know, in the book of Revelation, and the inhabitants of the earth are going to learn righteousness when his judgments are in the earth. And he's going to be concluding. And back to Romans 11, God has cast away but not thrust away. And Paul says in Romans 11:25, oh man, look at me, I'm already in 14 minutes on this show. How did this happen? I'm not willing for you to be ignorant. Callousness in part on Israel has come. In part, there's a remnant. Until the complement of the nations may be entering, and thus all Israel shall be saved according as it is written. This is written. Arriving out of Zion shall be the rescuer. He will be turning away irreverence from Jacob. This is my covenant with them. There's the famous word. It appears a lot in the book of Hebrews. Whenever I should be eliminating their sins, eliminating their sins. All right, this is the high priest that does it once for all time. So I gotta go. I'm in the middle of this amazing passage in Hebrews 8. We're going to be looking at Jeremiah 31, Ezekiel 36, and what God is going to do for this people. I'll probably still be cross-referencing Romans 11, because that has a lot to do with Hebrews 8. I believe it's written by the same guy. I love Israel because God loves Israel. Paul loved Israel because God loved Israel. He jumped the Israel ship. He came into a new calling called the body of Christ. And yet he still bled for his brothers and sisters according to flesh. And he wrote this letter of Hebrews to comfort them, to tell them that the new covenant is coming. It's founded on better promises. It has a new mediator. The priesthood will be transferred. The covenant will be transferred. The law will be transferred. Everything's going to be new. Hang tough. You're going to die without receiving the promises but God is not slack concerning his promises. This is Martin Zender. Join me here again tomorrow.